And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the 8 o'clock spot live here on the Grid Network's YouTube channel and Twitter account. I am your host slash judge slash moderator, Bryson Carver, back for episode 34 with three fantastic guests on tap for tonight. First off, it is the co-host of the Bi-Coastal Baseball Podcast and the co-founder of the Grid Network. And right now, as we see here today, number two in the standings for the 8 o'clock spot, it is none other than Mike Guido. Mike, how you doing tonight, my man?
Well, I'm doing a little worse now that I found I've been out for a while. I didn't know I was number two, so I'm doing a little worse than I was a few seconds ago, but I'm doing good, Bryson. It's draft season. Draft night is tomorrow night. We have a great show planned for tomorrow, so prepping for that. It's going to be a lot of fun.
It is definitely going to be a lot of fun. Everybody be sure to tune into that. The Grid's 2024 NFL Draft Show at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. We're going to have a ton of fun, as Guido talked about. Our second guest, Keith Nandon, special guest of the Grid Network's 8 o'clock spot once again. Keith, how you doing tonight, my man?
I'm good. A little disappointed Barry's not here today because I got into a little argument with him on his YouTube channel a little bit. But I'm glad that Mike's here and this gentleman over here on my right-hand side. But yeah, definitely disappointed that Barry's not here. He's trying to tell me that Bronny is talented enough to play in the NBA, and my head wanted to pop. But still glad to be here.
For sure. Great to have you in. I will say Barry will make an appearance in the show, just not in the form that we're used to seeing. More on that in just a second. Looks like I got our guy, Eric Ruiz as well. Massive Knicks fan. And we were just talking briefly before the show. And we'll talk about it on today's show. Pretty crazy ending of the night, huh, Eric?
Yeah, man. Oh, man. I'm not used to that. I'm used to them not closing games like that. But this is a different team, and I love what I'm seeing out there.
Yeah, no question. The hustle, the grit, the toughness, you got to love across the board. Before we get into anything, before we get started with our business tonight, the points leader for the 8 o'clock spot and the creator of this very show, Barry Grant Jr., is on right now, but he just sent me a few minutes ago a statement that he wanted me to read. I don't know why I'm doing this, why I'm cowering to him, but here we go. Barry Grant Jr. Says, as much as I would love to whip up on the contestants today, my heart is broken. My soul is crushed. In my many years of being a Lakers fan, I've never truly felt this level of pain. There's no way I can focus on these jabronis that are just mere placeholders. That's not nice. And a host that is just as biased as they come and perform at peak level. That really hurts. To have my smile snatched away like Jamal Murray snatched away game two makes me want to take a 1 week sabbatical. Good luck tonight. And just know the snap will be back. None other than Barry Grant Jr. That was a lot there. A lot of unnecessary shots taken by Barry. We'll look at the leaderboard. Of course, Barry is at the top. He's nearing 100,000 points right now. Mike Guido in second, followed by Alfred Parser Jr., John Rivera, Dalton Brown, Devin Nettles, Adam Bessie, Tim Barnard, Dylan Lima, EJ Savage, Ryan Flowers, Anthony Bessie, Alex Johnson. There's Keith Nannon. There's Eric Ruiz. And finally, Eric Van Lettens. Let's get into our first round rules, everybody. It's pretty simple. A great take gives you 200 points. A good take gives you 100 points. An okay take gives you 50. And a bad take, you come home empty-handed with 0 points. Barry was just mentioning game two between the Lakers and the Nuggets, which went down to the wire back and forth. The Lakers at one point held a 20-point lead in the third quarter of this game before Denver came storming back. And Jamal Murray hitting a shot heard around the world, so to speak. And you know what? Barry, I know you're watching. Let's take another look at that shot. Here we go.
Tie ball game. Worst can happen. We go to overtime. Murray makes a move. Here's it.
Bear, I hope if you're watching that was just as painful for you taking all those shots at us and just hurting all of our feelings across the board. I hope that was the equivalent of that. I'll start with you, Mike Guido. Is Denver going to sweep this series?
First, I want to say that I think Barry is absolutely 100% overdramatic. He's such a baby. Anyway, is Denver going to sweep this series? No, I don't think that they're going to sweep this series. I think that the Lakers will probably end up taking one game. Now, again, take that with what you will, but I'm not going to end up betting against LeBron James to get swept. I'm not going to do that. I do think that there will be a game that, because Anthony Davis is playing so well recently, there will be a game where Anthony Davis, I think, gets the best of Jokic in some capacity, neutralizes him a little bit, slows him down to some capacity, and that'll lead the Lakers to a win. But listen, man, Denver's just the better team. They're deeper. They're younger. You have to kind of consider at this point that Jokic could very easily be the most consistently dominant player in the NBA at this point. And, you know, there's really not much hope for at least lower seeded teams to take him down in a playoff series.
It's funny to me because you made a great point about him being consistently great. That first of all, I rarely see him have a bad night or even an off night to a certain degree.
Right.
But like, I mean, I'm watching the first half of this game and I'm thinking, he's having an okay night, and I'm not keeping, you know, track of his stat total. I look at the game 5 minutes after Jamal Murray hit the winner, 27, 20, and 10. I'm like, this guy is a freak. But no, I think you make a lot of great points. And Mike Guido, you will start the night with a good take at 100 points. I think that there's a lot of truth in like what you said. Denver's a better team, and that felt like the Lakers' best punch. Like, they kind of felt them out in game one. Denver sort of pulled away in the second half. This felt like you could see by the reactions of LeBron, AD, everybody across the board. Like, this, they really wanted this one badly if they wanted a chance to win the series, and Jokic, in particular Jamal Murray, snatched it from the jaws of defeat. To you, Keith, will the Denver Nuggets sweep the Los Angeles Lakers after going up 2-0 in this series?
Conventional wisdom would tell me no, because, I mean, you got LeBron James and Anthony Davis, so you figure they would get you at least one game. But I say, I mean, why not? It seems like they just own them. It's been 15, 16 in a row, including the playoffs, and it doesn't really help when it seems like, I mean, honestly, at this point, it almost seems like you might as well, you should just fire Darvin Ham now and put in LeBron as player coach at this point, because, I mean, Anthony Davis was absolutely abusing Jokic through three quarters, and it seems like they went away from that whole thing, and they wind up losing by 20. And I mean, well, they wind up coming back from 20, I should say. So it's, I mean, it almost just seems like Darvin Ham is kind of dropping the ball a little bit here. Why not? I mean, they've won 15 or 16 in a row. Denver is the better team. Sweep.
Okay. Well, listen, the Denver's obviously, the number's actually 10 in a row, but still, nonetheless, it's a pretty incredible streak. I think you make up an interesting point about Darvin Ham. You were talking about Anthony Davis scoring at will and obviously playing great defense the first half. I felt like the fact that we know what Denver's going to in the last 5 minutes of the game. They're just going to go Jokic-Murray two-man game for 5 minutes straight. The fact that the Lakers had so much success in doing what they were doing with LeBron and with AD in the pick and roll and just abandoned it, I found curious at best and you know, unprepared at worst. So, Keith, I'll give you a good take. I think you're right on the money about Darvin Ham and sort of them going away from what was working for them in the last few minutes of that basketball game. So, a good take for Keith. To you, finally, Eric, will the Denver Nuggets sweep the Los Angeles Lakers in the series?
I don't think they're going to get swept. It's hard to beat LA at home. LA is a much better home team. They're 28-14. They are shooting better this series than the Denver Nuggets are. They do have a higher shooting percentage. So that's why I don't think they'll get swept. But as far as to win the series, yeah, I think it's over. The Lakers always have like these Jamal Crawford-esque signings of six men with Kendrick Nunn, THC, and Austin Reeves. He's not showing up. He only has 13-9 these past couple games. Gabe Vincent, I think he needs his Heat jersey back. But I think they could pull one out. I think it'll be a gentleman sweep.
Yeah, and that's what I predicted coming into the series. I actually thought the one game the Lakers would get was the other night, just because there was so much desperation. Maybe Denver let their foot off the gas a little because they let them, you know, they had them winning nine straight. Yeah, I think you've got great points. Like, the role players haven't. I will say, though, D'Angelo Russell really stepped up in game two far more than I think maybe any of us thought he was capable of doing. Austin Reeves has had a rough series. And like you said, the Lakers are a significantly better home team, and it feels like if it's a 3-0 series, Denver's got them on the ropes. Denver might want to just go in and end it there, but the Lakers will be in a situation where this team's not sweeping us back-to-back years. This is not going to be one of those type of situations. So I think you bring up a lot of great points. And Eric Ruiz, you're bringing the numbers, bringing the facts. I'm going to give you a great take. 200 points moving you into first place going into the second round. I think it's just a significant it's a talent advantage for Denver. But at this point, right, could the Lakers get one just simply based off of desperation and just flat out being pissed off at this losing streak? That seems very much in the play. Barry's in the comments. They are getting swept. Darvin Ham is so bad, I just want it to happen. Yeah, listen, long term, I will say, Barry, be careful what you wish for, because LeBron James will likely be a free agent, and Philly would sure like to have him. And Mike, I know your Cavs, even though ain't no way he'd go back to Cleveland. The Cavs, who are, you know, beating a team full of kids, and the Golden State Warriors. Listen, he's buddies with Draymond. He's tight with Steph. I'm just saying. Let's move to our second round rules. Everything gets doubled from the first round. A great take gives you 400 points. A good take gives you 200. An okay take gives you 100. And a bad take, still nothing, at 0 points. The other crazy game, you're going to like this, Eric, and I think Keith is a Knicks fan as well. The Knicks snatching victory out of the jaws of defeat against the Philadelphia 76ers, down 5 with about 30 seconds to go. We showed the crazy ending in the Lakers game. Let's show the crazy ending in the Knicks game, getting loose ball after loose ball and being able to come out with the W here. Let's see what happened.
Lowry got the pick. DiVincenzo comes out of the pack. DiVincenzo finds Brunson. Great defense here on the Sixers. Brunson gets a prayer of a bounce. 2-point game. Maxey hits the deck. Hart takes it from him. Shot clock is off. DiVincenzo, no. Hartenstein with an offensive rebound. Another chance here. DiVincenzo. He's got it. The Knicks have the lead again.
Crazy ending, crazy desperation that the Knicks showed in that stretch there. Obviously, get the great bounce on the Brunson three, couple loose balls, an offensive rebound there by Hartenstein, going up over Joel Embiid in order to do so. But Philadelphia had a lot of complaints. You had Nick Nurse talking about, hey, I was trying to call timeout when we had possession. You had Tyrese Maxey saying, hey, they were grabbing my jersey as you know during the inbound play. There was a couple fouls that in theory could have been called down the stretch, but the credit to the Knicks, they were able to take advantage, and DiVincenzo there hitting the game-winning shot. I'll start with you, Keith. Do the 76ers have the right to complain about the officiating after this loss to the Knicks?
No, absolutely not. I don't think so. I mean, honestly, if you want to nitpick, once Brunson gets the hop on that three ball, if you're worried about getting the ball, you could call a timeout right there. You don't need anything to happen. And then it sort of seems like if you watch it, he's sort of playing that game where, okay, we're in trouble, we're not in trouble. He's calling timeout, then he's not calling timeout. I think we got the ball. No, we don't. At that point, it's too late. So, no, and I mean, Maxey pushed off initially, it looks like, to receive the pass. So, I mean, I don't think there's anything there. Just sounds like a lot of crying.
And, you know, when I say, well, yeah, what I say too a lot of times, bad call. But whenever I hear, oh, it's the ref's fault we lost, no matter what the situation is, bad calls over the course of a 48-minute basketball game or a 60-minute football game or a 9-inning baseball game tend to even themselves out over the course of that stretch of time. And like you said, you mentioned the Maxey play, he probably pushed off. I do love the fact that, again, I know I have no rooting interest. I'm actually rooting for the Knicks. I hate Philadelphia. But, you know, that aside, listen, I like the fact that the refs let him play, let him go, and you know, we ended up getting this classic yep. playoff ending. So I think you're spot on. I think you're right on the money, Keith. I'm going to give you a great take, get you to 500 points here. You make a great point about Nick Nurse where he's sort of calling timeout, but then he's not as Maxey has the ball. Then when he's really calling timeout, well, it's too late. The ball's on the floor. Nobody has possession. So I think you're spot on there. To Eric now, you are also a Knicks fan. Eric, do the 76ers have any real gripes or any real legitimacy to their complaints about the officiating in game 2?
Oh, yeah, no, they absolutely have a right to complain, just like the Knicks had a right to complain about what happened in Houston. I mean, these refs have just been getting it wrong all season long. Honestly, the only things that's going to solve this is we get the AI robots. But as far as Nick Nurse is concerned, he needs a little more awareness, too. I mean, you had a timeout there. You know, if nothing is there, you know, just call it before the inbound. You know, you're acting like you wanted to call the timeout at first, and then you didn't because you wanted to see how things played out. But then as soon as Maxey hits the floor and then the ball's scrambling, then you want to call the timeout. So, no, I don't believe that, like, you know, he should have been awarded a timeout there. But as far as the fouls not being called and everything, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's games under review all the time. So the only way to really fix is if there is more complaints being filed and they actually do something about this.
Yeah, I think you have a case there, like in the sense that, again, if you want one thing, I will defend the refs about in this game individually, rather than just, you know, the course of the season. Because like you said, there's been a lot of bad officiating this season. You mentioned the really missed, a bad foul at the end of the, or I think no foul really at the end of the Rockets and Knicks game with Brunson. Yeah, you consider the fact that in their defense, they tended to, throughout the course of this game and really the early part of the series, be relatively consistent in letting them play. But nonetheless, you make some really interesting points. So, Eric, I will go ahead and give you a good take to get you to 400 points here, just a little bit behind Keith there as we about get ready to head into the third round. Finishing with you, Mike, do the 76ers have a legit gripe, a legit complaint with the officials after their loss to the New York Knicks?
No, they don't. It's not the reason they lost the game, right? Look, I think that Maxey got fouled on that play, but I also don't think that the occurrences that happened afterward were things that were outside of Philadelphia's control. The Knicks ended up getting an offensive rebound on that possession. Josh Hart ended up with 6'4". Josh Hart ended up with 15 rebounds in that game, right? Like, you're talking about a team that just got out physicaled the entire game. And that was just a cog in what was going on the entire night. Right. It's not the Knicks' fault that Philadelphia can't grab two offensive rebounds or grab two defensive rebounds on that same possession to deny that bucket. The game didn't have to end there. Philadelphia's lack of physicality on that play, and honestly, throughout the entire game, was what costed them that game. It wasn't that specific play.
Yeah, and that's what the Knicks have won a lot of basketball games, won 50 games with this year, is their physicality. It's a classic Tom Thibodeau coach team. And listen, you sort of alluded to, all three of you sort of alluded to, I'll tackle it head on briefly, is the fact that how in God's name does 7'2" Joel Embiid not have a single rebound the fourth quarter of this series? Like, I know we talk about the injury. I get he can't move, but listen, he's balling through three quarters and
he can't move.
I'm just saying, what do you have, 31 through three quarters and just disappears like into thin air, Harden style, in the fourth quarter of his game.
He's compromised, clearly.
He's compromised, but through three quarters, he looks fine. So, like, it's, if you can give it to me for three, you need to be able to give it to me at least a bit, get a rebound in the fourth quarter. But I'm going to give you a good take, Mike, get you to 300 points. Yeah, it's the fact that you had, again, the out hustle by the New York Knicks. You had the fact that, again, Josh Hart with 14 rebounds. Is it 14 rebounds, you said? 15?
15 rebounds.
Listen, he's been doing that all season, but again, it gets a much bigger team in Philadelphia. All the more reason for the Sixers to kind of beat themselves up. Barry says, Bron ain't leaving. I don't know. We don't know that for a fact. Let's put it that way. It's not a guarantee that LeBron James is going to play why do you keep pointing to that stupid picture, Mike?
It's LeBron, and he's coming home, baby. That's what I'm saying. He's coming home.
I bet he is coming home.
Lift up, right. Lift out.
That was the last time LeBron was cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Last time he beat Gold, of course, it happens to be Golden State. But the point is,
that was when he was a basketball player. I don't know.
Bryson, by the way, before we move on to the next round, you see something special in this picture, by the way? Do you see something special in this picture? No, hold on.
It's hard to miss.
Well, what is it? What is it? I want you to guess.
It's the Larry O'Brien trophy, right?
No. No, what? So there's a little dot right there. Or I'm trying to, like, point to it backwards. You see that dot right there in the Larry O'Brien trophy?
I really can't from this angle know. What is it?
Okay, there's a little dot in there. That is Steph Curry's mean mugging face reflecting in the trophy.
Just know that we got you 3 out of 4 times. That's all I'm going to say. Don't you ever forget that. And you guys are the reason Kevin Durant went to the Warriors. We need to blame the Cavs more than we do.
Yes, we do.
It's y'all's fault. It's y'all's fault for doing that. Okay. Don't nobody ever forget that. Anyways,
we'll move on. You're right.
it's true. We'll move on to the third round rules. Everything gets doubled from the second round. A great take gives you 800 points. A good take gives you 400. An okay take gives you 200 points. And a bad take, you still come home empty-handed with 0 points. Let's talk some NFL draft. Let's talk about the team with the third pick in this year's draft, the New England Patriots, who have gone in a different direction. Rob Mayo from the University of Tennessee, go Vols, replacing legendary coach Bill Belichick. And a report came out today that despite a lot of teams like Minnesota, who has two draft picks, a lot of teams could potentially trade up to get a quarterback, given that we could see as many as 6 quarterbacks going round one of this draft. The Patriots haven't reportedly gotten any real offers. I think I know the reason why that is, but I'm curious if anybody else points this out. I'll start with you, Eric. What should the Patriots do with the third overall pick in this year's draft?
I might be jumping off a cliff here, but to be honest, I've been thinking about it, and I think they should take Marvin Harrison Jr. I feel like he's a sure shot. Also, maybe not last year's draft, but the year before that, they had Brock Purdy in the 7th round and Sam Howell went in the 5th. So I feel like these guys should take a shot at later round quarterbacks. There's Michael Pratt from Tulane. He could probably go like in the 3rd or 4th. And if that doesn't work out, Joe Milton from Tennessee is also pretty good too. I think I would just draft both of them and kind of see which one works out, but have a sure shot wide receiver. But that could be me. But I feel like this year's QB class is definitely stronger than last year's QB class.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's definitely stronger than 2022. That class might have been one of the worst in history. I mean, Brock Purdy's really good, but he was Mr. Irrelevant. Everybody else ended up being, you know, either traded or you know, almost to a degree out of the league. Yeah, I think, listen, Marvin Harrison Jr. is one of the great receiver talents we've seen within the last decade. I would go so far as to say maybe the best receiving prospect we've seen since Megatron. I mean, the guy is as crisp of a route runner. He's got speed. Great. He does not drop passes. To your point about the draft and them potentially taking a quarterback in later rounds. I will say this. You did mention Joe Milton as a Tennessee fan. I feel I have a certain level of insight to Joe that others may not. Here's what I'll say briefly about Joe is I'm not kidding when I say this. Mike, you may be able to attest to this. You as well, Eric or Keith. I think he has a better arm than just pure arm than Josh Allen. The guy can throw it to the moon. Maybe Josh Allen's strong, but man, the guy's a monster arm. But accuracy, pocket awareness, that's kind of the issue that you worry about with Milton. And, you know, if he's got that, if he's got it to the level of a Caleb or you know, a Drake May or a McCarthy, somebody like that, you know, he'd be a much higher draft pick. But listen, you make a lot of really good points, Eric. I'm going to give you a good take to get you to 800 points and the lead right now. And yeah, I think they've got a lot of different areas to go. They got a lot of freedom what to do with that third pick. And I don't think anybody fault them if they take, you know, one of the best receiving talents that we've seen coming out of the draft. So good take by Eric Ruiz. To you, Mike Guido, what should the Patriots do with the third overall pick in this year's draft?
First, I want to give kudos to Eric for trying to play the Tennessee homerism card on you. I got to give him a little bit of credit on that. Well done, sir. Well done. That is how we do things here on the 8 o'clock spot. Mention Tennessee and you get bonus points. Anyway, no, I honestly, it's a good point made because Marvin Harrison Jr. is at least he's my number one player. He's a really, really phenomenal wide receiver, really special. Maybe the best that we've seen in years. But I still think that New England's got to take a quarterback. I think they have to take a quarterback at 3. I know that the consensus, or I shouldn't say the consensus, but there are a lot of people talking about them trading back and maybe taking a quarterback later, maybe taking a quarterback. And if they make that trade with Minnesota, maybe taking a quarterback with one of their 2 first round picks. I understand all that. Here's the thing that I really want to kind of point out here is that I think that if New England were to trade back, I don't think that they should take a quarterback early. I think that they should do what Eric did, take a chance on a later round kid like Michael Pratt, like Joe Milton, like Spencer Rattler, like one of those players, and try to develop him as more of a project quarterback and surround him with a ton of talent from the early rounds if they were going to trade back. But in my opinion, they should stay right there, take Jaden Daniels or Drake May or whoever is still there, and actually give themselves a genuinely overly talented quarterback that they haven't had in forever. I mean, even Brady, to an extent, was not this super mobile, super live arm. Like, he wasn't Mahomes, right? Like, yeah. Get yourself a guy that can make every throw, that can move, who's athletic. Mac Jones wasn't that. Bailey Zappi isn't that. Tom Brady wasn't that. Like, Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't that. Give yourself a real talented quarterback at the position for the first time in I don't know how long.
Yeah, you make a lot of great points that there is a lot of guys. I think Drake May is a prime example of, like, to me, Drake May and J.J. McCarthy are the 2 polar opposites in this draft, where McCarthy's kind of the safe pick. If you put him in a good situation, he can be, he reminds me a lot of Brock Purdy, you know, in terms of stylistically, pretty athletic, but not
Drake May is
talent.
Very Justin Herbert. Like, he's got tons of arm talent. Like, if you want to talk about, like, pure arm talent and nothing else, I think Drake May might be the best in the class. He's so lively with his arm.
No, that he can sling it. The thing is trying to rein his mechanics back in, which if he gets the right coach, that could, you know, Drake May to me is the ultimate boom or bust quarterback in this year's draft. And we'll see how that ultimately plays out. But Mike Guido, I'm going to give you your first great. You went on a stretch like great takes there on the 8 o'clock spot for a while. You added, you know, to your repertoire, your resume rather.
And then you got stingy. I know. It's something weird happened.
I was screwing you over for that stupid LeBron picture. That was what was bothering me the whole time. That year still haunts me. But the point is, though, listen, there's a lot of issues with the New England's roster. And again, there are a lot of different routes they could go. But listen, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, we saw with the Houston Texans. If you don't get CJ Stroud, I'm sorry, you're not sniffing the playoffs. Right. Not saying the Patriots are going to do that, but that's the first big step in trying to rebuild, which they're still trying to do ever since Tom Brady left. Finally, to you, Keith, what should the Patriots do with this third overall pick in the NFL draft?
Well, I'm of the mindset where if your team has a lot of needs outside of the quarterback, where if all the other positions are lacking, I'm one of the people that would say don't take a quarterback. But in the Patriots situation, I do think you have to take a quarterback, because I think that there's enough talent in this class where you sort of flip the coin. You get one of these guys and you hope that they can turn into a franchise quarterback. Because the Patriots have tons of needs. I feel like, you're setting somebody up for failure, some of these guys. But like Mike was saying, this guy Drake May is really talented. Jaden Daniels, who, everybody loves, the dual threat quarterback. I think if you're the Patriots, I think you definitely have to flip the coin and hope that that you get a quarterback that can turn into a franchise QB, because they don't have that.
No, they don't have that at all. And like you said, they do have a lot of holes in the roster. I would argue that it's New England, the Carolina, and the Giants, to me, that probably the three worst overall rosters in the NFL. So, again, there's a lot of different routes they could go and draft. I don't think there's necessarily this is going to sound terrible, but unless they take J.J. McCarthy, I don't think there's a bad pick in this draft or a bad decision for the Patriots to make in this draft. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, over the course of the next couple of years or so. But, I think you make some good points. So, Keith, if I can add this up to your overall total. You have 500 points. You now have 900 points. Keith, give you a good take, get you to 900 in second place behind Mike. Yeah, taking a quarterback, and obviously Jaden Daniels, Drake May, too, high upside guys, two kind of different players stylistically, but two guys that if you put the requisite talent around them could be difference makers in the NFL. Before we move on, the thing that I said I was going to bring up was the fact that Patriots haven't gotten any offers that they would consider, going after. The reason I think that is I think either between Jaden Daniels or Drake May, I think the Patriots have made a decision on one of those two guys. And if said guy gets taken by Washington, then they're just going to trade back or take Marvin Harrison Jr. If they love the guy, they'll go ahead and draft him, obviously, with the third pick. So, again, a lot of – I would almost say everything that New England's going to do, given this new report, is going to hinge on what Washington does at number two. So that'll definitely be a fascinating story to keep your eye on. To the fourth round, final round with all three contestants on the 8 o'clock spot. Everything gets doubled from here, from the third round. A great take gives you 600 points. A good take gives you 800 points. An okay take gives you 400. And a bad take, still 0 points. Let's move back to the NBA playoffs, where Luka Doncic continues his co-ownership with Steve Ballmer of the Los Angeles Clippers, dropping 33 points last night, I believe with 9 assists, 9 rebounds, 6 assists or 6 rebounds. Going off in the fourth quarter, he had some big-time clutch shots. Dallas was able to win game 2, tie the series at a game apiece, and they will obviously head into game 3 with home court advantage. I will ask you, Mike Guido, to start the segment. The West is insanely deep this year. I think the Lakers are a really good team that just ran into a bad matchup with Denver. Are the Dallas Mavericks today the biggest threat to the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference?
No, I don't. I don't think that Dallas is made. Honestly, I'm not sure Dallas even gets out of their own series. Like, I'm not convinced that they're going to beat the Clippers in that series. I just am not. Here's the thing. I think that, and as good as Denver is, and I don't know that the team that I'm picking is going to beat Denver, but I think the best matchup for them in the Western Conference, or the Nuggets' worst matchup in the Western Conference, is Minnesota. I think right now that is the team that they don't want to see. That's the team right now. They're first in the NBA in defensive rating. They have tons of size that can match up on the inside with Jokic, that can play on the perimeter with Porter, right? Like, I think Jaden McDaniels can absolutely go out there and play with Michael Porter Jr. I think they can definitely play defense better than what the Lakers are showing against Denver at this point. This is a team that shoots the three ball incredibly well. I think Anthony Edwards is a dog. I know the thing that's going to kill Minnesota really would be their inexperience, but with Towns and Gobert, Gobert averages 2 blocks a game. Like, they're going to be one of these tough interior teams where that if you're going to force Denver to shoot, right? Denver is one of the worst teams as far as 3-point attempts this past season, but this is one of those things where, like, if you force Denver to shoot, you're putting them outside of their comfort zone. If you have to force them to go on the outside, I think Minnesota has the advantage there. So I would say, I'm going to say the Timberwolves here.
That's interesting. And obviously you mentioned one of the bigger teams this year in the playoffs with Kat and with Rudy. To me, one big question is, and we've seen this a common theme in the early part of this year's playoffs, is guys coming back late in the season from injuries, guys like Brandon Ingram, yep. Carl Anthony Towns, you know, kind of working his way back into the lineup. That's going to be, if they're able to beat Phoenix, and they're obviously up 2 games to none, they're going to be, you know, hopefully in good position. He's going to be in good position to really have an impact in that series. And maybe get Jokic out on the 3-point line. We know Gobert can't do that. And so, you know, the matchup, you know, advantage, I think favors Denver, but I think there's some aspects where Minnesota can exploit the Nuggets. So Mike, oh, I just gave you incorrect. I just shorted you 100 points there. I don't want to do that to
wow.
you, to Ooh. My Cavalier friend. Yeah, there you go. It gets you to 1,900 points in the lead. A good take. Yeah, I think that there is, because of Denver's size and because of, like, if a team like the, I don't know, Phoenix, or if Phoenix were to survive their series, Dallas, again, kind of a smaller team, maybe the Nuggets could exploit that. It'll be interesting to see as time goes on. To you, Keith, who do you think is the biggest threat in the Western Conference? Is it Dallas or is it somebody else?
I don't think it's Dallas. I mean, I love watching Dallas because I love Luka, and I like watching Kyrie too. But I just think that they are too, the way that they play offense, it almost seems like Luka seems like he has to make every play. He dominates the ball so much. It's like he has to make every assist. He has to make every shot. And as awesome as he is, that's not going to be sustainable against teams that are more talented than you, which Denver is definitely better than them. I mean, OKC might be better than them, but they're very young and inexperienced. I don't think that they're a legitimate threat. And like Mike said, this series is going to be a war. They might not get out of this. They might not get out of this series. This looks like it has 7 written all over it. They might not even get out of the first round. But even though I want them to, no, I wouldn't consider them a threat against Denver.
Well, listen, you make some good points. And like you said, the matchup wise, we saw the Clippers and the Mavs go 6 in 2020, go 7 in 2021. And this year, obviously, Kawhi Leonard coming back. That's another guy, by the way, you know, trying to work his way back into the lineup. Listen, we saw what the Clippers did without Kawhi in game one, shot the lights out. Luke and Kyrie ended up having really good statistical mm-hmm. games, but they didn't really, you know, they didn't get those statistical outputs until the second half when the game was pretty much out of reach. So you make some, you know, a really good case. No question about that. Keith, I will give you 800 points, a good take to get you to 1,700. It's, yeah, we've yet to see Dallas win a playoff series beyond one postseason alone, you know, outside of 2022. So, you know, we'll see if they're able to do it this year and make a playoff run. Finally, to you, Eric, do you think the Dallas Mavericks are the biggest threat to the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference?
Oh, no, not the Mavericks. Mike Guido had mentioned, it's definitely Minnesota, and they're probably going to see them early as next round. Minnesota has the best defense in the league, and they've given Denver some problems. They split the season series this year. They have enough bigs to throw at Jokic as well. So, and I feel like Edwards and McDaniels have really contained everybody else. The first game they played, Murray and Jokic was the only ones to score in double digits. After that, it's really just been Jokic carrying this team against Minnesota. But Minnesota is going to be real tough, man, and they've proven it all year by being number one in defense. So I think Minnesota could actually pull off the upset next round.
Listen, they certainly have the personnel to do it, like you said, with their size and splitting the season series. Like, that's one thing a lot of folks were talking about, where Phoenix, not a whole lot of people believed in them coming into the postseason, but they beat Denver 3 out of 4 times. You do look at the regular season series, that does factor into play, no question, especially later in the season when Minnesota has some success against the Denver Nuggets. And like you said, if it does turn into a series where they do become Jokic reliant, where, I mean, we're seeing right now at the Lakers, MPJ stepping up big time from 3. Aaron Gordon's playing great defense. KCP's, you know, playing well on both ends. If they'd make it just a Jokic-centric series, like we saw, for example, in years past when Jamal Murray was hurt, you know, that could definitely favor the Timberwolves in a major way. Eric, I'm going to give you a good take to get you to 1,600 points, which unfortunately is just 100 points short of getting you into the next round. So it appears that Mike Guido and Keith Nana will be getting to the final round. I'm sorry, Eric. It didn't work out for you today, buddy. But you will come back strong, I know for a fact. And a victory in the 8 o'clock spot, for maybe against Barry Grant Jr., is on the way next for you, buddy.
Hopefully. Appreciate the time.
For sure, for sure. Eric, shout out to you, my man. Great performance tonight on the 8 o'clock spot. We will move into our final round with our final two candidates. Let's look at our rules super fly fast. It's win or go home, y'all. It's we're in the NBA playoffs. We're going to be seeing some win or go home games as time goes on. The winner gets 10,000 points. The loser comes up empty-handed with 0 points. It comes out of this, ladies and gentlemen. The NFL draft is tomorrow, and while there's a ton of incredible prospects at all different positions, this is a loaded receiver draft, some really, really talented offensive line. This is kind of an offense-heavy, first round of the draft, kind of like what we saw it being a defensive-heavy draft about 2 years ago. But it's the stories of the quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., and J.J. McCarthy, among others. So I will start with you, Mike Guido. Listen, a lot of where you one of our favorites, Colin Cowherd, is a saying that a lot of your success depends on where you go. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. Sure. Who ends up, of these six quarterbacks, stake your claim right here, right now, which quarterback of these six has the most successful career in the NFL?
Yeah, it's kind of tough to say, right? Because we have no idea where anybody is going, except for maybe Caleb Williams, just because we kind of get the idea that he's going to Chicago, which kind of leads me to believe that I shouldn't pick Caleb Williams. But listen, I'm betting on talent here. Look, listen, Bryson, you and I have a little bit of a fundamental disagreement when it comes to quarterback evaluation, in some sense, just because, like, I did think that the pink phone case and the fingernails matter. Like, I do think that him crying in the stands with his mother, I do think that matters, right? When you're leading a group of men, you need them to respect you. You know what I mean? So, like, whether or not that's a big deal or not, that's definitely something that at least you have to take into consideration. That's the first thing. But as far as talent is concerned, I mean, it's undeniable, right? Like, he's so mobile. He's throwing balls across his body, moving the other way to the other side of the field with as much velocity as he does standing still. Like, it's just the arm talent and the mobility and the athleticism are so special that, like, the things that, like, his weaknesses primarily are that he tries to be special too much. Like, if that is your problem, then you have a really good quarterback on your hands, right? Because all it takes is just to reel him in a little bit, get his decision-making a little bit under wraps. But I think as far as talent is concerned, this could be the first great, great quarterback in Chicago's history, potentially. So I don't know. I think as far as talent's concerned, it's very hard to bet against Caleb Williams, especially not knowing where everybody else is going at this point.
Well, like you said, the perceived weakness of Caleb on the field in terms of him trying to make too much happen, it's very, very similar. Reminds me a lot of Andrew Luck when he came out of Stanford. Like, he tries too hard to make a play, and obviously that ended up hurting Andrew Luck because his offensive line in Indianapolis was terrible. But yeah, the only thing, my thing with the fingernails, the pink phone case, when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, I'm with you as it pertains to, obviously, your traits, how you carry yourself, certain little things you can pick up on.
Yep.
My thing was, if he had a legal history, if it was Johnny Manziel, Baker Mayfield, I would have major, major red flags, major concerns. Sure. By the way,
yeah,
no, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. And that's not to say that, like, these are like that what I'm saying about Caleb Williams is making him undraftable. Like, that, sure. Like, it doesn't, like, I agree with you. I don't think that, like, him having run-ins with the police, like we've seen with Manziel and with Baker Mayfield and some of these other guys that have had legitimate off-field problems. Caleb Williams doesn't really have off-field problems, but he has personality characteristics that I think that teams should look into. Sure. And if those are things that teams find as valid reasons to not draft them, I don't think that that's on the team, right? Like those are more of like, okay, look, you show up to a game with, and it's less about the pink phone case and the fingernail. It really is less about
representative
that.
Representative of that.
Whatever it is, right? A Pac-12 tournament game or something like that, where he jumped into the stands, cried into his mother's arms and like that. I don't have an issue with men crying. But again, right, if you're a professional quarterback that they have to invest millions of dollars into, you kind of want your head to be stronger than that, I think. I think that's kind of where I feel about that. So again, like I said, I've made my take. I don't need this to count or anything like that, anything that I'm saying. Sure, right.
Yeah.
But I think overall, though, talent-wise, I think Caleb Williams is right up there with some of the best.
Yeah, no question. He's in the last decade, really since Luck, you could argue he might be the best talent since Luck. Trevor Lawrence certainly has a case there as well. To you, Keith, which quarterback do you think will have the most successful NFL career? Could it be Caleb Williams? Could it be somebody else? Who do you think?
Well, first of all, I think you guys both hit it on the head where it's like it's where you go is really everything. So whoever the first pick is, I mean, I don't know why more guys don't do this. You'd be inclined to pull the Eli Manning card. I'm not going there. I don't want to play there. You know, just trade me, you know. But and another thing, totally agree with Mike on the Caleb Williams thing. I would be terrified with the whole crying thing, with the whole nails thing. I would be terrified throwing him into a locker room with grown men. It would frighten me. It would frighten me. But the media, he is going to be the media's darling. They want him to succeed. He is exactly what they want in a male athlete. If we're gonna go there, he is like, woof. He's perfect. He's perfect for the media. Perfect. They would soak that up. But my personal opinion, Drake May probably has the biggest. I think has maybe the biggest upside. He can throw it the hardest. Probably throw it the farthest. I think Michael Penix might be the most mature. I think he's the smartest. He can spin it a little bit. I like Michael Penix, but yeah, that's my take.
Yeah, that was a lot. But listen, I respect your authenticity right there, Keith. Listen, by the way, I'm 1,000% with you on Penix. I think he is.
I'm telling you right now. I can see there's going to be a 30 for 30 already tomorrow with Caleb Williams with the pink nails and the phone. I'm telling you. They want him to be good. I am telling you. They are praying. They are praying that he's good.
I get it, Keith. I get it.
He's a little flamboyant. They want a flamboyant. But I'm just going to listen. I'll just say this, and I don't know if this helps Bryson in my case.
No, your case is made.
This can certainly count if it's me. But I do think that Drake May doesn't throw the hardest in the draft. It is probably Joe Milton. But
no, listen, that doesn't add to your take.
Listen,
Joe Milton, and I don't think I'm being hyperbolic when I say this. I actually think just pure arm talent, obviously not overall ability, I think he has a better arm than Josh Allen. The guy, again, he can throw it a freaking mile. It's unbelievable. You've got to watch this.
If he was throwing a baseball, I bet you he could throw 95.
He threw an orange out of the practice facility, Mike. Like he's a freak. There's a lot of truth to that. Let's see. Look, we got a comment. Yes, Tim has definitely been vocal about his position on Caleb Williams. He's with Mike on the Caleb Williams thing. Listen, only time will tell. Like Mike alluded to. A lot of this, we know where Caleb's going. Everybody else is a question mark. A lot of it does depend on where he ends up going. We can have a much more strong feeling about that in the long term. But there could be only one winner on the 8 o'clock spot. And as we dial up the victory music between Mike Guido and Keith Nana, the winner of the 8 o'clock spot, episode 34, is Keith Nandan getting his first W on the 8 o'clock spot this week. Woo! Congratulations, Woo! Keith. All right. How do you feel about Keith?
Feels good, man. Feels good. And I didn't have to suck up to Tennessee sports or anything like that. So great.
Listen, folks think I just give you an automatic bonus. And occasionally, I'm not going to lie, occasionally I've thought about, if what they're saying is technically true, that like if they're going to say, Josh Dobbs is the best quarterback ever, I'm like, slow your roll just a little bit. Let's not go too crazy. But
I'm just going to point this out. Did I get extra points when I had Tennessee in the Final Four? Like, did you come on?
No.
Oh,
you were more confident about them getting the Final Four than I was, Mike, if you remember.
I know. That's my point.
That's what I'm saying. It wasn't like we were on level footing. We're on level footing. But nonetheless, though, Keith, fantastic performance by you tonight. Listen, two things that we reward, and we've said this from episode one of the 8 o'clock spot, two things we primarily reward, right? Humor and strong, defiant takes, and you brought both there in that segment. I don't totally agree with either of you on the Caleb thing, but I definitely see where y'all are coming from. I'm not going to lie, Keith. I wouldn't be terrified to draft him.
They love him. They want him to be good.
Is he ESPN's quarterback?
He is ESPN's quarterback. He is ESPN DNC's quarterback, my man. They want him to be good so bad, you know? Get in touch with all that femininity. They love that stuff. They love it.
This conversation did not.
He's
going to
get
us all
canceled, man.
He's trying. Listen, I didn't see the conversation going there, but listen, here's what I want. I want a great quarterback in the NFC. AFC's got way too many great quarterbacks. That's I need true, to see yeah. somebody, you know, especially the NFC North, that could really strengthen that division if he goes there as well. So, Keith, congrats to you, Mike. Great performance. Shout out to Eric as well for a fantastic performance himself. That's it for this week's edition of the 8 o'clock spot. Be sure to check us out next week, either Tuesday or Wednesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific time, live here on the Grid Network's YouTube channel. Also, tomorrow night at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, the Grid Network 2024 NFL Draft Live Reaction Show. I cannot tell you how excited I am for that. Mike's gonna be a part of it. We're going to have other content creators and people, you know, come on throughout the night to celebrate a fantastic, passing of the torch to the next young talented players to come into the National Football League. We will see you then. We got much more on the way in the Grid Network coming up over the next week or so. Stay safe out there, y'all. God bless y'all. Peace out.